This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date. Terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris. Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Hello, my friend Karen.
Hello, Chris. I just, the second as you started talking, took a sip of my drink, which is my least favorite sound to hear when I'm listening to people on podcasts or the YouTube horoscope tarot card reader who always drinks her tea.
Right.
And I literally want to scream and run out of the room. And I just did it myself.
It's okay. We have to be scared of accidental ASMR that we're doing on here. Because let us not forget of the muffin episode where, or donuts. We had a whole box of donuts and a lot of hate mail. No one wants to hear smacking.
We've eaten and we've drank in Starbucks on the mic so many times when we were in the car. As if nothing mattered in the world. This was pre-pandemic.
Just smacking and slurping like we're doing Foley work for a makeout scene in a teen horror film.
In a teen eating disorder after school special.
Very special after school special.
A very special Rice Krispies advertised. I was eating the Rice Krispie bar. Remember that one? That's what made that one guy really mad.
Oh, yeah, because there's the crunching and the snapping and the crackling.
Yes.
As well as the slurping. It's funny, I realized this weekend I had a couple fun gigs where there was a car sent.
A car sent to your house?
Like a driver, a professional. Oh. Where they're holding up my name. I'm not bragging. It's just very rare that I'm not Ubering. And I realized it's funny because we have a podcast where we talk while driving. That is really something I've discovered I do not want out of a driver. From here on out, I want someone that might be, it's just a cover for them being a hitman. I want a silent, stoic, brooding, handsome. I don't know why they have to be handsome. I'm just thinking of Ryan Gosling.
Because this is showbiz, baby.
Yeah. Because I had two drivers. One, this woman in Cleveland, she was really sweet and then just started talking about Obama and that his middle name's Hussein. And then the next driver, also a kind man until we started talking about COVID. And he was saying it was not he'd done his own research. It's not a virus. I'm just like, can we just, and I got mad. I like yelled at them and felt bad. It became a yelling thing.
Well, it's supposed to become a yelling thing because both of those times they were bringing up topics that Fox News has taught them. Here's how you can fight with liberals.
Yeah.
They essentially.
I just think that not everyone should have the internet. That's all. I just wanted to
Well, how about the fact that you can do your own research until the end of time, but you've never got your doctorate. Like, take your research and test it out at the local medical school that you can't get into. Well, how about that?
According to this second driver, a lot of the scientists that he looks up to have been murdered because they know it's not a virus. They've been killed.
Chris, did you just walk up to anybody holding a white piece of paper and your name wasn't even on it? It was just a crazy person you got into the car with?
He was dressed nice. There was no leaves in his hair. He didn't have a wild eye. He was a professional driver with a lot of personal opinions. And I'm just glad it's over. From now on.
It sucks.
Yeah.
It's hard enough.
Yeah.
It's bad enough when they have bad cologne on.
Yeah. Remember that.
Remember the time? There was a time where there was a driver that came and picked me up. God, I wish I could remember. Anyway, because this was a while ago, and he talked the whole time. I had to listen to some of his original music.
Oh.
On and on. And then I was wont to do in like 2015 or whenever it was, tweeted about it, like as it was happening, where I was like, so if I end up in a ditch, I just wanted to tell people or whatever. He responded to the tweet.
Oh, no.
When I got off the plane on the other end of where
I thought
I was
you meant
going,
while you were driving, because that's from a horror movie.
That would have been way worse. That would have been way worse. But yeah, it was really, that was very upsetting where I was just like, oh no, you followed me on Twitter? That's insane.
I'm sure, I know what you're getting at. I don't think these two people listen to our podcast, but maybe they. But I mean what I say, and I'm not going back on my snapping at them.
You don't have to, although you are giving them what they want by snapping at them, but they also have you trapped and they're telling you, basically they're saying, I will believe anything that passes my face.
Yeah. It made it complicated because I'm not kidding. They were both sweet people. People can be both. But speaking of sweet people, God, I'm getting real good at these intro segues, Karen.
Says who? Your driver?
Me right now to myself. Yes.
Just saying the same word twice doesn't mean... Just kidding.
Karen, do you want to...
She plays clubs and colleges fine country that, thank God, is no longer being led by a person whose middle name also sounds a little bit ethnic, God forbid. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mary Holland.
Hi.
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Yay.
Oh, wow. Yay. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank
you. In this car.
Thank you. Yes. Let's continue.
It's a nice car, right?
Uh-oh, look up ahead, Karen. There's a yield sign. If you could just play along, Mary, we do a lot.
Yeah, totally.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's really fun. All the different signs, and that's so fun. I love it.
When you drive, reading signs.
Yeah, reading signs. It's so fun.
Yeah.
It's the best part.
Most of our podcast was reading signs aloud. People loved it. And we'll get back to it soon.
I'm very impressed, though, that you could maintain... Did you ever find that the driving was... it was hard to maintain like a through line of thought or conversation? Like, I find it so hard to drive and talk.
Yeah, I found it very hard. And we discovered early on that Karen's able to multitask in that way. And I think... In my experience, a lot of women in my life are able to do a bunch of things at once. If I try and talk and drive at the same time, I just felt like I was going to make us crash, and Karen doesn't have that. She's
got it.
Well, and also, Chris was for a long time our sound man, and we were completely guessing at how to run the Zoom recorder and get good sound. So there were many episodes that you can go back and listen to where Chris loses faith, kind of like around usually the 25-minute mark. Usually on the heels of something really funny or great happening with our guest, and then Chris was positive it wasn't recording, and then he would that it was a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
For just everyone in the car.
I think. For everyone. Yes. And the pressure's on.
Yeah. The episode that we always bring up is that first time we had Tig on, who's married to Stephanie. You're
yes. Yes.
True. Yep. I want to say troop partner. Is the word troop?
Yeah. My troop mate is troop. What we like to refer to each other
troop.
As.
Troop with an E at the end with an umlaut over it.
Wild Horses, yes. One of the great improv groups. And also, wait, did you guys do a podcast or just a live show?
We did do a podcast. We did do some episodes in a studio and then recorded some live shows as well. So there are podcast versions.
Was the podcast non-live version scenes or were you just having conversations?
We did do scenes. Improv scenes. Mm-hmm. We got to cap it with a nice improv scene because that's how you work through, you know, what you just talked about and how you process it creatively.
Yeah,
right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're all sharing one brain.
Yes. What happened in the car ride with Tig?
Oh, it was our most emotional episode.
Oh, okay.
We all cried. We talked about death. Tig described her wedding with Stephanie and people blocking off the freeway in Mississippi when they were concerned about two women getting married. It was just really important. It was such a good episode. I'm never going to let it go. And I realized halfway through that something was wrong. I think the card was maybe sticking out too much. It recorded something, but it sounded underwater. I'm admitting now to Karen that I knew something was up.
No, what are you supposed to do though? We're half an hour in.
What do you do?
What do you do?
I have a fun game. Let's go back 30 minutes and see which one of us can remember what we already talked about as a game. It's a fun game.
This is not that fun of a game.
Yeah.
Gone.
If you're being honest, it's actually not that fun of a game.
It's not that fun of a game.
Mary, I've been watching, you're in a lot of very funny movies. I'm a comic, but I don't watch a lot of comedic stuff. I watch a lot of crime and dramas
action
movies for dads from the 80s. But you stole most scenes in Robbie. If people haven't seen Robbie, it's a Comedy Central joint with Rory Scovel. Mary's so funny in that. Arm, the arm wrestling movie, I loved so much.
Oh my God.
And I loved it. And this is before I'm like, who is that? She's great and everything. And then the holiday movie.
Thank you.
What that's called, happiest of seasons.
Happy season.
The happiest season.
Mm-hmm. I like to call it happiest of seasons, but you know.
Which you're not, Mary, you're not just in, but you co-wrote it with Clea DuVall, who I believe directed it. Is that right?
Yes. Oh, wow. Yes, she directed it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're really funny. That the end scene, everyone should just watch the things I mentioned. Just go to Mary's IMDb. This is usually a closing statement.
Pick any of it.
Anything. Just scroll
anything.
Yeah, and slam your finger down on your screen like you're spinning a globe on mystery vacation.
Click on the Voodoo Xerox printer and you'll, it's a treat. It's a wonderful sketch for Funny or Die about a printer that comes to life. So it's really anything. It's a choose your own adventure and you're going to have a great time.
Mary stands behind every single thing that is listed on her IMDb.
Yeah. Is there anything on that list that you want people to steer away from?
Oh my gosh.
What's the worst thing you've ever done?
In entertainment or morally?
Yeah.
Oh, morally. Oh, my gosh. Ooh, how much time you have.
Let's get into it. List all your sins.
I'm trying to think if there's... Oh, well, you know what? That is very funny you bring that up because the very first thing I ever shot in my whole life was the worst thing I've ever done in my whole life. And there's a very funny story around it. The worst acting I've ever done in my life. I've done so many more worse things, like in real life. But it was when I first moved to LA, and USC, you know, they have their film department and everything. And there's I don't know if they still do this, but at the time, part of the program there in the director program is an assignment from their class would be to reshoot a famous scene from cinema history. So right. Like the breakup scene from Good Will Hunting, or, you know, that's the only thing I can think of.
No, that's one that's used all the time. Yeah.
It's used all the time. But, and the director had to like cast it and then shoot it the way they would. And so I got an audition on LA casting they were reshooting a scene from Fried Green Tomatoes. And I was like, well, I gotta do that. And so I auditioned for it. I auditioned for both roles. And I guess this movie's very old at this point. I was gonna say, I don't wanna spoil it.
No, it's okay.
If
you don't know about Fried Green Tomatoes at this point, that's on you.
That's on you. And that is on you. But it's the scene at the end of the movie. It basically is a death scene. And it's this story, you know, it's between these two women who, you know, have such a deep relationship with each other. And it's a very dramatic scene. And I was like, I was fresh from theater school. So I was in my feelings. I was doing like emotional preparation. And I was like, doing movement work and all this stuff that I had learned to do from theater school in preparation for this scene. So I auditioned and I got cast as the and now I can't remember the character's name. Not Mary Louise Parker, but the
Mary. It's also a three.
Yes, that's what it's Mary and not Mary Stuart Masterson.
Yes, it is.
Maybe
yes,
it is Mary Stuart Masterson.
Mary Stuart Masterson. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay, great. Yes. Yeah, so her character is who I got cast as. And on the day of shooting the scene, we shot all of the other actresses' coverage first. I didn't know anything about coverage or anything. And I was just, I was giving it every take I could. Yeah. I was giving it. I was just serving up just way too much emotion. And so by the time like it turned around and it was on me, I was completely exhausted and I was wrenching feelings from myself, which is so fun to watch.
Yeah.
oh my gosh, I worked myself up into a frenzy trying to like get there, you know? And, then at one point it was in between takes and the boom operator leaned over to me and he was like, I just want to say your performance is really beautiful. It's really amazing work and just really inspired by you. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. Like, I was like, yes, I'm so impactful as a performer. So that short, she finished editing it and everything. And then she took us out to dinner, the director. And she was like telling us about the shoot. And she was like, oh, that shoot was such a nightmare. And we were both like, oh, really? Why? And she was like, well, the boom operator was wasted. And
he was being emotional because he was drunk. I love it.
He was wasted.
And I just want to add to that and say, I love you.
Oh my God. Wow.
That is so nice.
That is so nice. But anyway, I feel like, I mean, the director and the other actress did a great job, but I was real rough stuff in there. So steer away from that if you come across it on Vimeo or wherever.
Yeah, just
or give it a thumbs up for effort, because you know what? That's the thing about acting. It's like, sure, being convincing is one thing, but what about just plain old effort?
Yeah, exactly.
Effortful performance.
Yes, and we don't recognize that enough. Like there's actually not enough awards for effort, and there really should be.
If you're breaking a sweat, yeah. Oh,
I was sweating. I was crapping my pants trying to cry. So it was great. Yeah,
it's very. The difference between, like, because I studied theater in college when I went for the year and a half before I got kicked out for not going to any other class. But I really like live performance. But
yeah.
Coming to LA and just kind of being like, oh, I'll go on some auditions, having no experience or any. I never took a cold reading class. I never took a scene class. I never took a like acting for TV class.
Right.
I had no fucking clue about anything. And it took me so long to realize it's like, I think I like the live immediate experience of, you know, either you're failing or you're succeeding and it's all happening right there.
Right.
I really don't like acting at all. And I tried to do it for so long. And it's like, I don't know if I'm even good. And I definitely don't like it, which would affect whether or not I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, the whole thing is just a bit of a, like, it's so strange to, it took me, you know, maybe 15 years to be like, yeah, I don't know if I actually even like that. I just signed up for it, kind of.
Wow. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
funny to hear you say, because you're good in things, Karen. Are you someone, maybe you're like me, where you're like, I don't enjoy it while it's happening. I enjoy it when it's done. Like, but during, it's work. It's like not, it's stressful and it's work and it's exhausting.
And it's also like, I just think that, you know, the reason like some people are good at it is because they are built to go, of course you want to watch me do this.
Right.
But I have like about seven problems just to get to the point where I'm like, well, I'm going to do something. You know, I don't know. I don't think it's good. And I certainly don't believe in it.
Yeah.
But here, I'll do the thing you asked me to do.
Yeah.
It's like, there's so many, you know, when you watch a beautiful performance, to me, it took me forever to realize like about 80% of it is the confidence of that person knowing you want to watch me do this. Like Brad Pitt knows you want to look at his face no matter what he's doing with that fly fishing and A River Runs Through It or whatever. He's like, you're going to love this. Join me.
Oh, and he's right on the money, isn't he? Oh my God. It's so true.
Yeah. And I'll third that. And you know.
Yeah.
Got to.
Got to.
And I'm someone, when I'm even no matter how much experience I get, the mantra in my head while I'm acting is, do I belong here? I'm not sure I belong here.
It's a real minus, I think. I think it's a stand-up comic thing where like it serves us as comics to judge ourselves because you have to be ready for a worst case scenario.
Right.
But I think it really doesn't serve you as an actor, as a camera actor.
Right.
To be like have that look in your eye of like, oh, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like
I feel
like that's what I always look like. It's just like, I'm not buying it. I don't know why you would.
Ma'am, you're in the middle of a line.
You can't. Oh, was that out loud? I'm sorry.
That was,
what I meant was, here's your change, sir.
Oh, okay. Now that time I bought it.
You're acting on camera. It's now a bad time to do crowd work?
Could I get, where's the boom operator? I just need a little support from the people around me.
Where is he? It's so true. You kind of have to self-generate that the validation of like, this is good. Or you almost have to shut off that part of your brain that is thinking about, is this good or not? Because you can really go down a terrible, terrible spiral.
Right.
And no one's going to give you that validation either. Like, oh boy, no one's giving it to you.
Yeah,
no,
that's what's hard. There's no one that stops after each take and says, hey, that or laughs. I'm addicted to hearing laughter.
Same.
And that's really the only sign that I know of that things are going okay.
Yes.
I just remembered I was in a TV show and it was, I felt horrible the whole time. I was in this weird panic where I was like, I won't be able to remember my lines. So then I just did it. Like I was mind fucking myself.
Yeah.
But then there was one point where I was in this scene with this woman who was playing my sister. And the director called cut and she goes, well, she's not. And she did this super fucking rude thing. What basically like that didn't work because of what she just did. And then I got so angry. And the next take, and it was like a kind of a dramatic scene or whatever.
Wow.
And the next take, I made all these choices and it was all completely just, I was filled with rage. And they were like, cut. Oh my God, perfect. Karen, that was amazing. And the DP like leans over and he's like, that was really good. And I was like, I want to fucking kill someone. I didn't give a shit about what was happening
Keep
in the
rolling.
Scene at all. It had nothing to do with anything. And it was like, that was the one of the first realizations of like, oh, I get it now. And I am not built for this.
Right.
I'm not.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. There's really good actors are the ones that like show up and they're like, oh yeah, I know how to manipulate myself to get there.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. It also, I mean, that I remember doing a one act in college where, you know how when you're in college, oh, I have another funny thing to say. Well, I hope it's funny.
Oh, it's gonna
we'll see. We'll
I guess,
see.
Yeah, yeah, you'll be the judge of that.
I'll lean over like a boom operator and let you know.
Okay. You know in theater school how you're like, you're 19 or something and you're being cast to play like 80-year-old, you know, or like a 9-year-old. Like I played a 9-year-old in Grapes of Wrath as like yes. a 20-year-old woman. And that's like what, that's theater school because there's a limited pool of people you're casting from, you know? But I remember we were doing a one act and me and my best friend at the theater school were playing these two old women, like, and we just like existed on stage during the whole one act. And I was like, really like trying, I was like doing like, an old woman character, like I was like, this is really good. Like in my head, I was like, every time, this is really good. And then I got a note from the director that was like, he was like, you're mugging, you're doing all this weird stuff with your face. And then I was like, oh no. And then we did another rehearsal of it. And my best friend, I was like sewing or something. And my best friend said, stop doing that. It was like a real moment between us. And it affected, like, I got so like, what? That the whole rest of the scene, I was like only thinking about that. Was that real? Was that? And then afterwards, the director was like, that was amazing. You know? Like, it sort of got me out of my head. But on the note of playing younger or older, when I first moved to LA and I had an agent and they called me and they said, hey, I'm just, you know, we're about to start sending you out. I just want to know your age range. Like, what do you think you could play? And I was like, oldest 75. And
I need an oil pencil for line work on my face.
And youngest.
And an old sweater.
Oh, that's.
Youngest, I think 11 or 12.
Like, that's so funny.
Yeah,
I love it.
That theater school
wasn't
thing.
That because I started with a wildly popular troupe out of Montana, and I thought one of the one of our rules was no kids, no let's mentally deficient characters. Like you, that was a no-no always. And I just thought that was like a rule for all of acting, but maybe that's just our troupe leader. Eva, maybe. I think that was just her. And she was right.
Yeah.
And she was right.
For improv, it makes sense. Because if you're going to stand there and make up a scene, don't do a thing that's just going to make people insanely uncomfortable because they won't get a laugh. If you're trying to play cutesy or make fun of this a deficiency, everyone's going to bum out.
Yeah.
And it's anti-comedy as opposed to Marriott Juilliard, who's like, I can and will play a child of the Dust Bowl.
Oh, and you know, I upstaged the whole show. I was a child of the Dust Bowl who had just a real sense of imagination and was like doing all kinds of stuff upstage that pulled focus.
I love the idea of this happening, but all the other actors were children. Except for you.
Yeah, it was a really avant-garde production. And we didn't get great reviews, but you know what?
Strange.
Yeah, I know. It was weird. But we had a point of view.
That makes me think of the... not to just keep talking about... But I think it was the last thing that I believed I could do. And the reason I think after that, I was like, don't do that stuff anymore. It was because one of the first things that happened, it was the first day of rehearsal. But it was for a TV show, but you know, whatever. And we were just doing these rehearsals of the scenes and everybody else, my scene was like fourth. So I was just watching all of these amazing British, Scottish actors who all went to the Royal Academy, you know, like they were legit. And I was just sitting there like, I'm fucked. This is crazy. Yeah. I don't know how I got this part. Because I was like the American sister, right?
Yeah.
And
cool.
I was really excited, but I absolutely did not believe I should be there. Yeah. And then the first scene we have in front of everybody, and it's like two other people are talking and I say my line and the director goes, hold on, what? Don't do that. Don't make that noise.
Oh, no.
And I go, I was like, sorry. And she goes, you're making that American actress noise before you speak. And she fucked me. Like, it absolutely was such a bad directing move on her part.
Yeah.
And I think it was because she was like an expat and I think she wanted to show everybody else that she's not. But it's this thing, and it's really true. It's a complete sitcom thing from the 90s where if you're doing comedy and someone says something to you, you go, you make a little exhale before you say your line to kind of show. And that was like I'm showing that I don't like what you just said or whatever. But I had no idea I was doing it. And I didn't know. And also I wanted to go, yeah, thanks. I have no training. Like, you shouldn't have cast me.
I learned this from watching episodes of Becker or something.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
Like, it was sitcom acting. But it was that thing where it was like, it was almost like she figured out the perfect thing to dismantle me entirely for the rest of the time. It was crazy. But then after a while, it was like, I started to realize, well, you're in this, so you better fucking like, you know, like you're not going to get it from the boom operator. You're not going to get it from her. Everybody in the cast was lovely. So I was just like, well, just do what they're doing. Like, you'll be fine.
Oh my God.
I had to kind of like dig it up myself.
That's such an awful experience to have.
It was
like,
terrible.
Oh my God. I can really relate to that. It's like, And was it in front of everybody too? God, it's such a no, please don't.
Yep. And I think if I were a true like actor at heart, I would have been able to kind of like counteract ego wise.
Yeah. Right.
Counteract that. But it's like, but I think it was just like in that thing where I was just like, how did I get this part? This is so exciting. And then it was like, it was basically her going like, I'm not sure. And then I'm like, oh, because I'm really not sure. So now we're all not sure. It was like that, you know, watching something kind of unravel.
Yeah, totally.
Ugh. Luckily, the other people in it were so good and so nice and so cool that that helped and elevated it. And I just, you know, it was a great experience overall. But it was one of those kind of things where it's like, yeah, you can't, essentially that's what I'm saying. You can't have a low, bank of your confidence bank has to be completely full times 10.
Yes.
You can't be kind of like middle to low or you're fucked because one thing like that happens and you're fucked.
Yes. Or you have to like put all the self because, you know, I'm just filled with self-doubt and loathing, but I'm able to sort of like, you shove it away and you're like, I'll deal with that when I go back to my room and I'll
cry.
I'll hate myself for the rest of the night. But for now, like, yes, it's almost like you have to like, just, I don't know, push it to the side. Cause it's definitely not a thing, at least for me, where I feel like I am full of confidence throughout the whole thing. It's like, I deaden a part of myself.
Yeah, that's that's what
is that the way to put it?
I think that's what people get good at. When I watch someone that is unshakably confident, I quickly realize a lot of the time that they aren't confident. They hate themselves like I do as well, but they're able to set it aside, and I've never been able to set it aside and get into full character.
It's tough to get into character.
It is.
Oh, getting into character is so hard. You have to sit.
Yeah.
You have to find a good chair.
That's the hardest part.
Yeah. I want to start to get into this standing acting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not on Zoom then.
No.
Full body stand-up acting. Mary, what was your first, what was the first job you got in Hollywood where it wasn't a USC student film, but it was actually like, you were like, oh, this is a real one where you have to sign a contract.
Oh my gosh. It was a Cascade commercial.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
What was your line? What was the line?
I think my line was like, which I, of course, then played way too big. But I was like, you can't put that in there or something like that. It was something about the dishwasher, and that I was like, oh, because my husband in the commercial, he was going to put a dish in the dishwasher without having rinsed it first.
These dumb commercial husbands.
And I was like, you cannot, I was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I grabbed him by the collar and I spit in his face. And but the premise of the commercial is, oh, you don't have to rinse it, you know, with the Cascade. You just put it right in. Keep it dirty and all that. And yes, it was so exciting. Yeah, I was over the moon to be on a real set and to be, it was so exciting.
Did you have to sign something that said you would not be in any other dish or soap related commercials for a year and a half? There is something like that.
Yes. Yeah. It's like an exclusivity thing. Yeah. I think I'm sure I did. Yes. Any sort of, dish products I could, and you know, they were clamoring.
Yeah.
To have me.
That's when they all start calling. Dawn.
Yeah, Palmolive.
All of them.
Palmolive. Palmolive was really persistent. yes, I did have to do that. And it was also the first time, like, the acting lifestyle is so crazy because you sort of, you, of course, never know when you're going to work. And you work and you get, like, a chunk of income. Yeah. And then, but it's not consistent. And so you're expected to figure out for yourself how to make that chunk last. Mm-hmm. And you know, I learned that lesson the hard way. But it was my first time like having that experience and like, you know, not that it was a ton of money or anything, but it was like, you know, when I was a hostessing in a restaurant or like dog walking and stuff, it was like, oh, you get little checks on like a weekly basis, but it was thrilling to see a number that was larger than $100. Yeah.
Did it last a while? Like it wasn't a national commercial that paid.
It was a national commercial, but I wouldn't say it lasted as long as I would hope.
You just turned a Madeline Kahn.
Because there's also like the narrative you hear, and I don't know if you both experience this, but the narrative you hear like, oh, commercial acting is where it's at. You know,
you gotta get on the Super Bowl.
You're set for life. Yeah. It's basically the narrative that I had internalized.
I think it used to be that way. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No longer.
No. Now it's just
so it lasted you for what, 2 months?
Yeah. And then they take away the insurance and you're left with these car payments from a Honda 08 Honda Accord that you bought. I don't know. It's just an example.
Chris, you're crying.
It's okay. It's my method acting. That's the first thing I learned when I got to Los Angeles is how to cry on command. It had nothing to do with acting. It's just, that's what the city did to me. Did you really, was one of your first jobs at Medieval Times for reals? I know you've talked
about
this.
That was my first ever job.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
I was a photography wench.
Now that's, you know, that's a problem. That's a job where men, they're playing along like at Dick's Burgers or whatever, or Dick's whatever. Where
Last Resort.
That place where it's like, here's your napkins, asshole. Can I not? I don't want to play the game. Can we be normal? Thank God I'm so tired of this character. Were men just like, hey, wench? It had to be awful.
You know, it really wasn't. The whole reason I love Medieval Times so much. Yeah. And I went, my high school marching band went when I was 16 or something to the Medieval Times in Toronto. And I loved it so much that as soon as I went to college outside Chicago and there's a Medieval Times in Schaumburg, Illinois. And I was like, I gotta work there. Do whatever. And it was 50 miles away from the town where I went to college in. So I was like, worth it. I will drive 100 miles round trip every Friday, Saturday, Sunday to get paid $6.50 an hour just to be in this world.
It would be fun to be that character all day. I would like that too. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. But I also wasn't interacting with the guests as closely as
were. If you were interacting with them, that would be too close of a photo.
Mm-hmm.
From the wench. you have to, from a distance, take a good photo is what I'm saying. My knowledge of photography is that you don't have to be 6 inches away.
And that's very true. But what we would do, like the serving staff would come by and they would they would get, called on for drinks and stuff like that. So they were getting called to more. And I do remember going once and our server was like, you can call me my name, you can call me this, but do not call me wench. I know what I'm dressed like, but don't you dare call me that. Yeah.
Word, I think, is why I asked that. I'm like, that's not. They probably have changed that, maybe.
I'm sure they have, yeah.
Were you in a different area? Like, people came to get their picture from you?
Yes. Well, so my job was, it was a small staff. There was seven of us, maybe. And what we would do is, have you been to Medieval Times?
Yes, I have a follow-up story that I'm very excited to tell.
I can't wait to hear it. Karen, have you?
I tried to go one time, and we called ahead of time because I have epilepsy.
Right.
And they were like, do you have strobe lights? And they're like, no, it's fine. And then we get there and there's huge signs going, no strobe lights, be warned. So we all we all looked at each other and just got back in the car went somewhere else. Yeah, it was really disappointing and I felt so guilty. And then three people in the group were like, I'm really glad we're leaving. I'm really excited we don't have to do this. And I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel too bad.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks. Yeah. They do a light show with some of the, but that's so disappointing that they weren't upfront about that to begin with.
You know, the strobe lights of Medieval Times are represented accurately.
And they are.
That's good. That's fine.
And they are. And, as is us taking pictures with cameras and trying to sell you little keychains with your pictures in it. But that's kind of what we would do is people would come in and we would take pictures of groups together. And it varies from franchise to franchise. Sometimes the king will be out there, or the queen, and you get to take pictures with the queen. But we would just do, I don't know why we didn't have a character out there, but we would just take in front of a backdrop, take group pictures of the people, and we'd have them hold up their table numbers. So we see the color, they're in the yellow section and they're at table 9 or whatever. But it's a kind of a terrible picture to just have you just holding up your table. But we're like, whatever, it doesn't matter. So we would take the picture, we'd go after the show had started and the audience was in the arena. We would go up to the photo lab and we'd print off these souvenir booklets and keychains. As I mentioned before, there are keychains. And, this different size copies of the photo, we put them in packets and then we'd each get a stack of packets and we'd have a flashlight and we'd have to go into the arena and try to sell them to people during the show.
Oh, God. Flashlights, not a torch?
That's what I was.
Amazing.
It's something about the photos being flammable as well as our costumes.
Yeah.
But I was so bad at selling those packets. I was so bad. Because also there's most of the pictures was a child's head, 7 feet of space of the backdrop and then a little table card in the corner. These were not good photos, but my coworkers did sell a lot of them, but I just couldn't do it. So anyway, that was the job.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should have a monitor so you just point at it, like at a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's also so wasteful because we would print them ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's
people
ridiculous.
Wouldn't even say we want them.
Yeah.
It was part of the experience, there I guess, is you just get to...
Well, I guess I shouldn't have framed it, my lord.
Yeah, I wonder if any cheap dads go through the dumpster at the end of the night and be like, here it is. And I'm not paying $7.99 for it either.
Oh my God. Well, it was $20.
Oh, shit.
Those packets were $20.
That's Schaumburg for you.
Tell you what.
It's expensive.
Mary, do you know like Jordan Morris and Hal Rudnick? UCB.
Yeah.
We worked for this thing called Fuel TV. It was like a skateboard, snowboard network, but we had to do these go to events. And so we went to Vegas. I don't know if it was a medieval times. It may have been like a ripoff of it. Maybe it was medieval times, but we just were going to interview some knights and in character.
Just your standard. Yeah.
Be in character and do jokes and then put together an interview montage. But they wrote us into the show onto the act. Like they just said, oh, you're going to be part of the show. And we had marks that I had to run in the mud in full armor, and a horse like got up on its hind legs right above me. And that's where the strobe lights came in. They shot red lights on him, so he seemed like a red knight, like from Fisher King or something.
Yeah,
Then Jordan had to fall, and I had to lift him up. And I'm realizing now that they were messing with us, because I had to run with Jordan on my back through the mud. And I was sore. I like pulled a muscle in my leg. They were probably laughing at us. I had to... A guy fully swung at me with a sword, and I had to block it with a sword that they left in the mud. It was insane and horrifying. It was stunt work, and we were not... We're like, oh, you don't have to put us in the show. And they're like, oh, you're in the show. It was so...
Did you have a rehearsal, or were they just like, good luck?
Looking at a piece of paper. Oh, you'll run, see this out there? You'll run out to there. And that's when the first horse comes. There's an argument. That's when you pick up the sword. Then your friend will be on the ground. I can't remember the whole scene or the storyline.
Yes, you can't.
The fact that I had to run with Jordan in wet horse mud and poop and wearing armor.
Yeah, there's
armor.
Poop in there.
There was poop in there. No one warned me about that. I can't believe I, rubbed it in my face for good luck. Anyway, it was horrifying.
Chris.
I was sore. I know. I don't know why. Before a scene, you have to rub the dirt on your face. It was absolutely horrifying. And I couldn't walk the next day. Like the running. Yeah, it was so...
You sued, and now you own that.
I could have. Yeah. Now I
could have.
Now I just got a free stein of mead. It's Miller Lite.
Yeah.
So scary.
God, what a crazy. I'm so jealous of that experience. I would have. All I wanted was to get in that arena.
Yeah.
Did you have to work up to it? Was it like if you started as a photography wench, someday you might be able to be queen or
no,
whatever?
No, there was no ladder. There was no ladder from photography wench. But I did. The Lord Chancellor, who sort of is the MC of the night, he was also in charge of casting. And so I would always whenever he would be, I was like, oh my God, he's so glorious. And one time I was standing at the photo, we set up a booth after the show where people can come. And if they didn't buy the packets during the show, they have like another option before they leave. And so I was standing there with my coworker, who is this really lovely woman, and the Lord Chancellor came up to us, and I was like, oh, it's the Lord Chancellor. And he did the thing where it was like, he was looking at me and he smiled. And then he turned his attention to the girl next to me and was like, excuse me, are you an actress? And I was like, oh! And she was like, no. And he was like, well, we're looking for actresses to play the part of the princess in the story. And I was like, oh, I was like, that's all I wanted. But he like gave her, I didn't say anything in the moment, you know, because he wasn't talking to me, but he gave her like information for an audition. So I think you can like get scouted, I guess, to be a part of the show. I'm sure there are like regular auditions too, but it was heartbreaking.
You have to catch the Lord Chancellor's eye, essentially.
Yes.
Did you have to call him that?
Do people stay in character when there is the show isn't happening? Like, permission to use the bathroom, my vassal. Stuff like that. Did you? I mean, I imagine people stay in character.
Well, I really wanted to. I was also like, I was really into Lord of the Rings. I was like listening to the soundtrack to and from work. So yeah. I actually didn't have any friends at work. I didn't talk to people. I sort of like showed up. I got like my corset and my clothes and I just like, yeah, stayed in character, I guess, the whole time. But my character was, it wasn't like a super strong character or anything. It was just like, you know, I didn't ever drop out of it, I guess. And like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Plan to go to TGI Fridays with anybody, you know?
Right, right. Well, I guess I do that during Halloween. I've realized it's not that bad to stay in character with your costume, you know, or I've done it. They have like a Renaissance festival here.
Yes.
And I went with a group of people and they all, some of my nerdier friends, and they all stayed in character. And so I'm like, I just got quiet. That's where I didn't want to do it. I'm like, no, I'm eating another period turkey leg. You know, I'm doing my part.
Yeah, I love it. I love that whole world. I just really eat it up. So yeah, that was my first ever job.
That's
a great first job. What a standard to set.
Oof.
Whereas like some people work at Ed DeBevick's, but you're just like, no, I've gone back in time to take photos.
That's right. No. I would accept no less at that time. I didn't really understand how jobs worked. And I was like, it has to be fulfilling a fantasy.
Yeah.
Any job I work has to fulfill a fantasy.
And sorry, you were driving. Did it take you a half an hour? Did it take you?
No, it took me an hour down and an hour back.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
So I paid to work there. But it was great.
Oh, wow. That's great.
In many ways.
In many ways.
Now, Mary, you're the kind of person that I feel like I went to college with you. I feel like I've known you for a really long time.
Yes, I feel the same way.
It's really weird, but did we first meet like with me doing ASCAT or that UCB show?
Yes, that was the first time we met. I remember we were backstage and you had written for Space.
Yes. Inner, outer, other space.
Other space. Yes, yes, yes.
Other space.
And
that's right.
It was right before we were about to go on and you mentioned that you were writing for that show and, I fell head over heels for you. and I mean, not because of that fact, because then I, you know, saw you perform and do your thing and was madly in love. And then, and I think My Favorite Murder was, relatively young at that time. Mm-hmm. But Betsy Sidaro was backstage with us and she was like talking to you about your podcast. And I was like, what is this podcast? And then I started listening to it. And Karen, you are in my ear for hours every week. So I really feel like we have a very long, very long history. But that means a lot that it's a mutual feeling because I just adore you.
Sure.
That's cool.
Same. Well, and also improv is the kind of thing, I've talked about this and you and I have talked about this before, because I feel like improv and stand-up are opposite, where improv is anything goes, stay in the moment, see what other people are doing.
Yeah. Right.
And for me, that is so scary and so horrifying, and I trust no one, and I need to get the big laugh myself, and I don't give a fuck about anybody. You know, so I have such a competitive kind of controlling thing about performing, where stand-up, it suits. But my friend tricked me into taking an improv class one time and it cracked me open, where I was like, oh, all of that is like neuroses. And if you can actually play against that and give into anything could happen and you will be fine if you just trust this moment, whatever. So then I got this appreciation for improv and what improv people do. And when you're good at improv, what an amazing thing that is. So I'm so from the 90s where like coming up, it was like, if you're in stand-up, you think improv is dumb. And
right.
you have to stand against the other team.
Yeah.
Like that weird pre-internet competitive weirdness. So when I first started getting asked to do shows like that, I was like, you got to put all that weird shit down, that like, and just give over. That's like, you have to play their game.
Yeah.
Because it's a good, the skills are really important as a performer, like being open and being calm and being confident and all those kind of all those things. So doing it with you guys, you know, and the team that you guys had, I mean, every time it was like, I felt like I was telling these stories that were like, oh, I don't know, here's this story about my dentist because someone suggested floss.
Sure,
right,
sure.
Right.
And it's just like, this, I'm not giving them anything. And this is like, in terms of stand-up, this is a failure. And then you guys would do this scene where it would be fucking amazing and hilarious. And you're just like, holy shit.
One of the more, I did not expect it or know how self-indulgent it would feel to be a ASCAT monologuist and then watch your story come to life. It's like so self-fulfilling. I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever experienced. You sit in a chair.
It's so nice to hear.
And watch your story come to life. I did it a couple times and I it was so exciting and I'm like
so excited.
Yeah, it's such a fun. I did not see it coming. How it put me in a good mood for.
I loved hearing that because it is such a improv is such a collaborative art form. But I really loved the ASCAP format so much for that reason, where it felt like we were all working together to make the show. Like it was the monologist and then it was the improvisers and we all like create it. The show couldn't exist without either component. And it was
and
so joyful.
What is actually called? Not a herald, but a name. It's a name.
An Armando?
An Armando.
Armando!
See, I just wanted to put in a plant a seed that I do indeed have a training in improv. And I was...
His background.
Yeah, well, it's wallpaper. No, I was bad at it because I, like Karen said, I really noticed the contrast when I moved to Austin because of an improv festival, and then I immediately started doing stand-up. There was nights where I would do improv with, and it was short form games, and then afterwards I'd do stand-up, and I would either suck at one or the other because they're two different mindsets, and building a scene with other people and being that open and listening and not trying to get, I would just get a joke in and they'd roll their eyes probably. And I'm like, or I would suck and then I'd do well at stand up, but never in the same night. I realized that it wasn't so much a competitiveness, but that was there, Karen, like you said, like improv people don't hang out with stand-up people. I'm like, why? Right. I like both.
Yeah, that's made up.
But it was really hard to be a part of both. It was two parts of my brain. Maybe that's just me, but...
It makes me think the first time I did that improv class, the first time I... Because I just said, no, I'm auditing. Because it scared me to death. I was like, so sorry, you're saying I don't get to control everything and like... It was like basically saying, put your entire personality down that you have been cultivating for, you know, 25 years and then good luck.
Right.
It was just like, this is horrifying. So the very first scene I was in, you know, I have to pick my action. So I, of course, start flipping burgers because deep down, I'm not a creative person at all, is how it felt. And I'm sitting there flipping burgers and the guy enters the scene and I just very slowly turn my back. And it was Chris Barnes, who was the teacher. And he's like, hey, Karen, what are you doing? He's like, you have to acknowledge a person came into your burger joint or whatever.
Yeah,
and I was just like, oh, yeah, I don't want to interact with him.
You no-butted him.
Like, you're choosing to basically ignore someone. And the whole point of you standing there is to say, hey, what's up? Like, hey, why are you in my burger joint?
Yeah.
And it was the funniest, like... It's just like, well, sorry, these are my instincts. My instinct is to turn my back. That's who I am. I guess I have to face this now.
Yeah, but in your defense, what burger joint do you walk in and it's the cook's job to say, welcome,
you're in a burger place. Exactly it.
It's kind of like, he was snoozing on his part. Hi, can I get something from you?
You know, yes. No, I'm the line cook. I have plenty of stuff to worry about.
And also, get out of the kitchen. What are you doing back here?
Yeah, why did you walk in? And that it's so funny because you immediately went to flipping burgers. That the clip that they sent here, I just watched where you all did improv on Meltdown, and every suggestion, they're like, apples. And you all just started picking apples. And the... What I don't know. It was just everything. You in unison knew that you just had to do the same action. No one was ever going to be the customer or even holding a basket of apples.
Yep.
Just everyone do the same action.
Everyone match.
Yeah.
This is because I also like I taught. After going through UCB and performing there for a while, I was teaching classes and would coach and stuff. And it is such a crazy thing because obviously you're working towards being funny.
Yeah.
Right.
But you really have to, you almost have to be like, I'm not going to even try to be funny. Like we would encourage people to like, don't worry about comedy right now. Like just like exist in this like space, exist in the burger joint. Don't worry about how it's going to be funny or like try to make something happen. Like you can just like base level, just exist and make it feel real. But that makes no sense to our bodies that are like, why am I on stage right now?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It felt very dangerous to be on stage, but not be giving people anything to justify my burger flipping existence.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, I can't just stand here.
Yes.
I can't just stand here and I also can't figure out what you're about to do, so I can't acknowledge you. Like, the decision-making, and I think that was really what my kind of fear was, that all I did was learn, you're afraid of it because, it doesn't really work. So, like, the whole idea of going to these classes, and I really love Chris Barnes because he was such a good teacher, and he was so just like, that exact thing of you're not writing this scene and you're not in control of what the other person does. It's all just about how you react to what ends up happening. And you do that all day. So you already know how to do this. It's not
from living life.
Yes, exactly. It's like, it's not that big of a deal. Where to me, it was all like, even if the stage is only half an inch above the floor, you're on stage. So you better be like, hello, my baby.
Yeah.
Given 1,000%.
Oh, you better hello, my baby all over that stage.
Because that's a catchy song.
Yeah, come on. Well, it's so vulnerable. I think that's like what it comes down to is like, it really requires, you're just so raw and so exposed and so vulnerable. Like people will not laugh is what I tell myself all the time. but that is after you do it so much, you just get desensitized to that and you feel okay, I guess, being that kind of...
Well, that's where the power is. Because if you understand that getting vulnerable is what's going to bring something, and like that's... People are in the audience watching you do it because even just getting to the vulnerable part. Like the first time I did ASCAP with you guys, where I knew I was like, there's going to be some like heavy hitters here. And then are you going to be the wink link? And it was all that shitty, that's the kind of like the negative talk that I think is going to get me somewhere where it's like, and I was just like, here's the key. They know that you are having to basically make something up, tell a story based on a suggestion.
Yes.
So it's not like I had to bring, here's my best stories, because it's not about that.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it like, sit there and think about it for a second and then just tell the most interesting story, not the funniest or not the most like punchy, but like all you can do is what they give you. Wait, like try to think of something around what they give you and be specific so that the actual improvisers have something to do as opposed to like get a bunch of laughs and then sit down and cross your arms. It's like you're here in service of that later scene. So just be in service and thank fucking God. Cause I was just like, it was that feeling of like, of course I have the compulsion and the like lifelong, you know, mental illness of I have to be funny and I have to make a joke. But then there was this weird like, oh, but yeah, he said, I'll never forget it because the first suggestion was floss. And I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I'm trying to impress these people and I'm trying to this and I'm trying to that. And then it was like, nope, you have to now be here and sincerely think of what this makes you think of and talk about it.
And you were perfect. Karen, you're perfect.
Thank you. It was so fun though, because it was that thing of a different way of getting to the same results where it's like, I won't be the engine and I won't be the writer. I'm just trying to, you know, get a bunch of stuff going yes. so they have something to do.
Yes. That's yes. all.
Can I yes. admit something?
No.
There was something good. Let's keep this a not safe space. There was something that was acted out when I did my monologue and I added it to a joke because I knew it was never going to happen again. So they actually wrote one of my jokes.
Oh, Kat. Wow.
I'm like,
what
oh, that's
was
a
the
great
joke?
Idea. Oh, it was about my mom dressing me up as a crossing guard. And there being an actual crossing guard on duty. That's what the real life side of it. But the way they acted it out, it's like, oh, that would be funny if that was one of the things I was concerned about. I think kidnappers or something. I added that. And it was an idea I got. Because I was like, oh, no, I was worried about that. I forgot that until they reminded me. So it wasn't an actual theft. They just reminded me of my own no. similar thought.
No,
but yeah,
exactly.
So fun.
Yeah.
That is really the fun part, though, is like you're kind of a part of something that it has everything to do with you and nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
So you can like, you know, I don't know. It's funny. And then there were some parts where like, I remember one scene where it was like, I really was just stretching and I was like trying to think of something. And I told a weird story about the first time I went to an Indian restaurant with my aunt and uncle in San Francisco. And we were all sitting cross-legged on the ground or whatever. And it was almost like, we're not sure what to do with this. And that became the joke where it was almost like I started realizing like, oh, you can't fail in this. Really.
Yes, exactly.
You can't yes. fail.
Which is, it's such a beautiful, it's, I love improv so much for that reason where I think that's such a human thing to think, how am I going to survive in this situation?
Yeah.
And in a comedy show, the way to survive is to be funny. And yeah. you can be funny by like trying to out-funny the people you're on stage with.
Yeah.
But the actual, the beautiful thing about improv is, as you said, Karen, like it has everything to do with you and nothing to do with you, and you cannot fail. Like even when I would get, and I still get nervous before shows and everything, but I just sort of, what helps like release that is just being like, I don't have to worry about any of this. Like all these people are on stage with me and we will figure it out. It's like this blanket trust you have that no matter what you do, you will be supported.
Yes.
And it's such a... It's so freaking beautiful.
She's crying.
I knew we'd get her to cry.
She's crying.
It's so freaking beautiful.
Yeah, it probably helps that you're probably good friends with everyone in Wild Horses, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, we are good friends. You all know each other's brains.
We do. We do. And because the first part of our show is we just talk, like just have, you know, conversation. Karen in Georgia did it at Largo. I remember that was such a such a fun show. I have a vague memory of talking about pubic hair. A vague memory. Anyway, we can go back and listen to it. It's one of the episodes that we that was on our podcast. But the but yeah, it's you after you talk so much about yourself and your point of view, yeah, you do, you really do get to know each other so well.
Yes.
Are you back to doing live performing?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm back.
Good.
Are
we're
you?
All back.
Oh, are you back?
We're all
She's back.
Back.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Have you all done a lot of shows?
I just got back from some fun shows, and it is. Audiences are so appreciative and excited.
Yeah.
And I feel that everywhere, and that I want it to stay that way. It's a very good time to be doing live shows. Yeah, I've been loving it.
Have you done some, Mary?
I have, yeah. I actually just came back from doing some shows in New York, and I haven't been to New York in many years. So that was so exciting to be there. But I totally experienced the same thing where it was like, everyone, there's such joy to be gathered again that you feed off each other. The audience is feeding off the performers and vice versa. And it's just, it's so positive and happy. Like, it's amazing.
It's great. And then I just go right into my COVID material. Remember how this was happening? Oh man, I thought we were going to forget about it.
I'm here to remind you about every moment.
Remember 3 months ago when these people wanted to hear these jokes?
I'm afraid you're going to forget about quarantine and COVID, so I'm going to remind you.
Yeah.
Do you have any plugs, Mary, of like shows you're... Because honestly, listeners, if you have the opportunity to see Mary Holland do improv in real life, you have to do it. It's the funniest, most magical. You have to go see it.
Thank you, Karen.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, we the Wild Horses, we do have a show coming up May 29th at the Dynasty Typewriter Theater in Los Angeles. But it's cool. What they're doing is they're doing a hybrid thing where they're live streaming the show and they'll have an audience.
Oh, cool.
Have y'all performed there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's so cool.
But it's been a while since, because for a while, everything was live streaming. And I mean, I was doing shows to a silent void with the Zoom participants or audience muted, you know, and I thought that was actually a good exercise, but I was getting tired of it. But a lot of people miss being able to watch shows from their homes, like those streaming. I forget that maybe the audiences were enjoying those. And so it's cool that you're providing both now. Yeah, that's
It's very cool. So we'll do that on May 29th at 5 p.m.
Hey. Is it a nice Sunday afternoon?
It's a nice Sunday afternoon. Come roll in straight from brunch. We'll treat you to a show.
But in New York City, it's like 2 in the morning. So it works out.
It works out.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And so that's the next live show I have coming up with Wild Horses. And then I am in a movie, in a film that will be released on Netflix on May 13th called Senior Year.
Is Rebel Wilson in it?
She is!
I read the paperwork.
So that'll be fun. It's a wild ride.
Yeah, before the premise of that is so funny. Could you just...
It's very funny. So Rebel plays a cheerleader who at 17 had a terrible cheerleading accident and went into a coma.
Funny.
I mean, can you imagine? They had me at hello, my baby. Hello, my darling. but then she wakes up 20 years later and she wants to finish her senior year of high school. So it's
so,
a real fun.
That's awesome.
That is so funny to me.
Yeah.
Just the premise alone, I will be watching.
It's great. And it's written by Brandon Scott Jones, who's a brilliant improviser and writer and an actor. And so it's got a great group. There's Sam Richardson, there's Zoe Chow. You know, it's a fun group. So
awesome.
I can't wait for it to come. That's May 13th.
May 13th.
Nice.
Put it in your cals.
Yeah, your que, your que, your Q, your.
Put it in your que.
Yeah, your Quibi Q. Wait,
Quibi. No. Oh no,
Netflix. No, don't talk about Quibi. No, please don't talk about Quibi.
I'm glad you said it because I wanted to yell it. you're so great, Mary. Thank you so much for being.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Yes, this was. It was great to see you and
you
see your face and talk to you.
Yeah. You too.
And
you too.
Everyone,
I hear your voice truly every week. So it's wonderful to get to see your face. And Chris, so wonderful meeting you.
Yeah,
it was a joy.
Oh, thanks.
I love talking with you both.
You were terrific. Yeah. And everyone, watch anything Mary's been in. It. She just steals the show.
Except for that fried green tomatoes scene.
Yeah, please
leave that VHS tape in the dumpster that you found it in.
What if that boom operator then later became like David Fincher? Someone that didn't really realize.
Yeah.
He was also getting his start in show business.
Get on IMDb, see what he's doing now. See if he remembers you. Maybe there's a friendship
Maybe I should. Maybe there's a friendship. Yes. And maybe that was also a formative artistic experience for him, where he was like, well, I know the kind of art I don't want to make.
Yeah, he quit.
And it's
that
the kind
day.
That she's doing.
Reenactment.
He became a ceramicist after that.
Yeah, that's right. It's Seth Rogen.
Oh, boy.
Thanks for being on, May.
Awesome.
You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN.
AR!
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Casey O'Brien.
Mixed by John Bradley.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's DYNAR Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Listen, follow, and leave us a review on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And don't forget, you can listen to new episodes 1 week early on Amazon Music, or early and ad-free by subscribing to Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Honk, honk.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.